over 60 watching online, which blew me away. So there you go. It's a lot of people that are out there, maybe sick or suffering or sleeping in. But at least they tuned in. And I just want to say that I got a little text from Pastor Matt in the other side of the world, in Israel this morning, early, saying, go for it today, John. And I thought, I was surprised he was thinking of me preaching. I was surprised he even knew. He's doing his job well. God bless him. All right, well, we're in this thing about Exodus and then a little thing about John 15. Jesus' wonderful words, I'm the vine and you are the branches. It occurred to me that there is a very real connection between these two ideas, because Exodus is about God wanting a people and calling out a people to himself. And in a sense, what Jesus is talking about is that people who have been called out to himself and who are his people, expressed as the church, as the living church, in various ways. And that's us here today. Last week, you'll remember that Conrad spoke to us from John chapter 15, and he was reminding us that Jesus was about to die on the cross. And these are his last words to his disciples. And everybody knows that the last words that someone says when they're about to die, you want to hear them, because they're important words. And I wanted to know what my mum said when she died earlier this year, because they're precious words usually, and words spoken just before eternity, and in Jesus' case, just before he dies on the cross. Well, the disciples, don't say unfortunately, can't blame them in a sense. They're in the full flush of Palm Sunday, when the crowds are excited about Jesus and welcoming him back, and everything seems wonderful. And these hours before Jesus is about to die, they're perplexing hours. They can't quite tune into what's going on. This is just before Jesus is going to be arrested, you see. And they are going to experience the greatest challenge of their lives. The greatest challenge of their lives. Jesus uses very powerful picture language in this chapter 15, because he really wants to strengthen the impact of what he's saying. So that's why it is such a powerful image, this I am the vine, you are the branches. Of course, it's a metaphor, because I look out at you today and I don't see branches, I see people. And I don't see the vine anywhere, but Jesus is saying, you are a vine, I am the vine, and you are the branches. So this is a powerful, powerful image that Jesus is saying. And what he's trying to impress upon them is they are connected. We're connected. Connected to him. How close? As close as a branch is to a vine. And I'll tell you something. If you cut a branch off from a vine, it doesn't take long to wither. You know what I mean? Doesn't take long. And then Jesus tells them that the key to their future fruitfulness, I like it. He doesn't say the key to their success. He says their fruitfulness. The key to their fruitfulness is remain in me. Stay close. Abide. Stay connected. 11 times, actually, in those first few verses, is that word remain or abide used. 11 times in 11 verses. It's an incredible repetition pointing out, stay connected. So important. That's what verses 1 to 11 focus on. He's the vine, we're connected, we're dependent. I want to talk to you from verse 12. And at verse 12, there comes a change. And as we read these verses, I want you to notice the relational words that are used. Okay, so here we go. Verse 12, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. Wendy mentioned that in communion. I no longer call you servants, because servants do not know what their master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command, love each other. Now here Jesus is explaining the quality of the connection that he has with us and us with him. He says, you are my friends. That's what it's like. This is about friendship. Friendship. Well, it's an amazing thing to say to a bunch of guys facing the most challenging experience of their lives. Don't worry, guys. I'm your friend. And that's what Jesus is saying here. Now, it occurred to me that there's a question arises, in my mind anyway. Was Jesus just talking to his followers, or was he also speaking down through time, all the way through to believers like us who want to follow him? People like you and me. Is he speaking these words to us? Actually, when we apply these words to our lives, there are a few problems. First of all, is there anyone here that can claim to have been a friend of Gandhi or Winston Churchill? No. Anyone? Nobody. People would think you're nuts if you said that you're a friend of someone who is long dead and it was impossible for you to have ever met them. They'd think you're crazy. How come we're not nuts then? Saying, wanting to be a friend of Jesus, long dead, long gone. Well, it's because every single one of us here today believe deeply in our hearts and know Jesus died and rose again. So he's alive. He isn't dead. And that's why he wants friendship with us. He's fully alive. And you can see how utterly relevant, how important these words can be to us because he's alive. Now, the second problem with these words and thinking about friendship is all of us have had a friend who has let us down in some way. We've been taken advantage of, perhaps, by people we thought we could trust. I guess everybody has some bad experience with a friend which disappoints them. So friendship can be a very sensitive area for us. Or maybe you're lonely here today because you don't feel like you've got a good friend. So it's a sensitive area. It is a sensitive area, and that's why it's a bit of a problem when we talk about it. The third problem is, the third problem is, I believe this is true. Our understanding of friend, the word friend, is contaminated by Facebook. Can you agree with me? It's contaminated because people ask to be my friend, and I don't know them. I always go back and say, do I know you? And then sometimes I go and check their friend list, and you discover they have thousands of friends. Because I traveled a lot in my life and I made some real friends overseas, I noticed that maybe in places like Nepal or India, people that are friends with my friend there see my name and they want to add me to their list, but I never met them. Never met them from Adam. So there you go. What does that tell you? Facebook friends are not really friends. They're contacts, at best, I guess. Sometimes you haven't even been contacted by them up until this moment. So this word friendship, it has its problems. But listen to this. The word for friend that is used here sheds light on what friendship really is. Okay, I got this from a text. One of the most common verbs for love in Greek is phileo. The Greek word for friend, philos, comes from this verb. In the New Testament, a friend is immediately understood as one who loves. This connection between friend and loving, very closely connected ideas. So in this passage, Jesus calls us his friends. It's about relationship. It's actually about a close, very intimate and warm relationship. And in just five verses that I've read to you, Jesus gives us two really important tests, shall we say, or two proofs of his friendship with us. And then he gives us two very important tests or proofs of our friendship with him. So we're going to look at those this morning. Two from him, two from us. First of all, the two proofs of his friendship with us. Here's the first proof. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Friends, you know a friend by what he or she does for you. That's how you know a friend. Suppose I'm out driving 1 a.m. in the morning on a stormy night and I'm on a deserted road and the car breaks down. It's pouring with rain and I don't have my AA card. Because it's the middle of the night, I know I'm in trouble. Who can I call? Well, my brain instantly begins to compute. And I first think of family, because maybe they're the closest ones to me. But then I remember they're all overseas. Not much help. And then I think of my really close friends, but it's holiday season and I know they've all left town. Well, then I think of my home group. But our home group has been going for a year or so and we're still getting to know each other, and I'm not quite sure how one of our home group might feel if I'm ringing them at 1 a.m. in the morning. Who knows? Pull out my church list, which I happen to have in my bag. Who can I call? I think of all the people that I know, and I realize of all those people, there's probably only one or two friends who would do absolutely anything for me. So I call at one or two, and when I get on the phone, I say, my car's broken down, could you come out? And my friend says, no sweat, glad to come. I'll be there. That's a friend, isn't it? That's a true friend. A couple of weeks ago, one of my true friends died. I mentioned my friend Martin. And I was up at the funeral, and it was a lovely funeral. People spoke so well of him. But people didn't know what I know about Martin, because I was his pastor for 8 years, and we got very close. And he got close to me and I got close to him. And I can tell you this, he was a very successful businessman. And he was a great supporter of Linda's and my ministry as we traveled. And there was a particular situation and we needed to raise a whole lot of money for a very expensive trip somewhere. And I wrote out a newsletter and I sent it out, and this man, Martin, called me back and he said, John, if you need money, don't write me a long letter. Write me a letter, but make it short. I haven't got time to read a long letter. You know how I interpreted that? That's a friend. Well, he showed his friendship in countless other ways. That goes without saying, but the thing is, he was a friend in so many other ways, but I'll never forget that statement of utter commitment to us. I have to say I didn't call on it, I don't think ever, because I didn't need to. But the saying itself stuck with me for years. Friendship like that really, really means something. You know a friend by what he or she does for you. And it's exactly the same with Jesus. He knows he's about to die. He tells them the greatest demonstration of love is if someone dies so that you can live. What's he saying? I'm your greatest friend. What's he saying to us? Here's the proof of my friendship. I'm dying for you. I have died for you. That's the greatest thing. What could Jesus do more to prove his love for us? Seriously, what more could he do? So how come there's many people don't feel like Jesus is their friend? Lots of people don't think Jesus is their friend. Way down inside, if they're really honest, they think he's angry with them. Or maybe disappointed with them. People struggle with guilt. People feel ashamed. And you know, shame absolutely wrecks prayer, destroys it. Maybe you think, I'm not important enough. Maybe Jesus is too busy. Someone reminded us last Sunday, 200 billion galaxies. Man, he's got a lot on his plate. I have a friend. He's a very close friend, actually. He would say he's a close friend to me, and I even honestly can say I feel like I'm a close friend to him. Our friendship goes back 40, 50 years. We're friends. He's also a very busy man. And I ring him up, and I understand that he's a busy man, and somehow, without knowing it, although I'm his friend and he's my... somehow, I get this feeling he can't wait to get off the phone. Just that feeling. Now, do you really like talking to someone if you feel they can't wait to get off the phone so they can get on with the more important stuff? Well, you just don't. I've been a follower of Jesus for a very long time, and there's various ways that I feel like I've come to know him. I suppose initially I knew him very much as my Savior. I wanted to know my sins were forgiven. And there's been times when I've known him as my healer, and my Lord, and my shepherd, and all the other things that we can, other aspects of Jesus' personality, and we get to know him gradually. I have this theory. Maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. I think I'm in the friend phase. I think I'm in the knowing Jesus as a friend. That's the season of life I'm in. And I'm particularly interested in anything that highlights that. So I'm not sure if I told you about this, but you might remember those kids in India that were a special visitation from the Holy Spirit. And then one of the girls that was in that group came through with her father, and we had coffee together. This is about a month or 6 weeks ago. And so this girl is sitting there. She's like 18 or 19. And she's a lovely girl, sweet, not completely normal. And I said to her, oh, have you seen Jesus? Oh, yes, lots of times, she said. Perfectly naturally. Yes, lots of times. I said, what's he like? She said, he's really friendly. I love that. He's really friendly. Well, we had a home group meeting this week, and some of you folk were there, and my friend Rock from Slovenia was speaking. And Rock is one of those people that was a really bad guy, by his own admission. Like he says, I've done every sin in the Bible except murder. So that says it all. But the Lord Jesus encountered him in one very particularly incredible way. And Jesus appeared to him, and he could see the silhouette of Jesus coming towards him. It was this brilliant light in this room. He was in another room, and he was actually in a meeting, but he was transported into this other situation. And Jesus is coming towards him, and he comes right up close until Rock says, all I can see is his eyes. Now, I have heard him tell this story many, many times. And so because I've heard the story, I like to drag out of him all the detail. And so on Thursday night, he wasn't forthcoming with the detail. So I put my hand up with a question, Rock, what were his eyes like? He said, friendly. Friendly. That's Jesus. Friendly eyes. He wants us to be friends with him. I think he's the best friend you will ever have. And he always has time for you because you're friends. And I think if you really believe that, it can change your life. Seriously, I believe that. So what is the first proof of friendship? You know a friend by what he or she does for you. Now here's the second proof. And I should add there, of course, Jesus has done the ultimate for every single one of us. Here's the second proof of his friendship to you. Jesus says, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. In other words, a servant doesn't think about an order, he just obeys. No thinking, just do. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. So this is the second point. A friend is someone who takes you into his confidence and talks personal things over with you. That's what a friend does. Jesus says, everything that I learned from my Father, I've made known to you. He's revealing the Father to them. He's saying, let's talk, let's share, let's discuss things, because I want to take you into my confidence. And this is a picture of a very, very highly intimate, truly close friendship, see. We have a certain way of calculating friendships. And I thought of this as a sort of fairly crude example. Not so crude, but it seems to make this point. Way back in my life, 1969, my last year at university, and I had a car, so I was the form of transport for the young people's group. And when I went off to youth group, I would pick people up. And it was nice. I liked their company, and we'd talk and chat as you do. But it got a bit onerous for a while. All that petrol, all that time. But then I discovered something. I discovered that Linda, my wife, she lived just 2 kilometres away from me. And she was blonde, and she was beautiful. Just push the button. Wait for it. Keep going. I was impressed.
No wonder.
Exactly. I was also very shy in those days. Oh my goodness, I was so shy. When I discovered how close she was living to me, I hoped she'd ask me for a ride, and I hoped, like anything, the other friends wouldn't come. I think of all kinds of excuses. Why? Because romance changes everything, doesn't it? Well, one day I had to speak at the youth group, and I knew I needed to focus on what I was going to say on the way into town. And then Linda rang up. I knew she'd want to talk. My wife is a great sharer, and I didn't want to be distracted. Guess what? Forget the talk. I picked her up, and there's always another talk, let's face it. Now, fast forward maybe 6 months, 8 months, and Linda and I by this stage are an item. We've talked a lot. We're friends. So when I pick her up, I say, oh dear, I've got to speak at the youth group tonight, so would you mind not talking to me? Just pray for me. We'll talk later. And she says, fine. See, that's a friend. I took her into my confidence. She listened. She understood. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's saying, you're my friend. And the proof of it is, I take you into my confidence. And there's lots of things I want to talk to you about. Are you listening? Are you listening? He wants us to learn to listen so he can tell us things. He even wants us to listen so we know what he thinks about things. I was involved in a situation. Yep, that's a nice picture. Do you put it up again? Oh, I'm sorry, I put the order of the tithes. Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that, dear. Anyway, I was in a particular situation, and I was with this guy. This was overseas. And I wasn't too struck on his preaching style, to be perfectly honest. I don't want to go on too long about that, but it began to sort of get up my nose a little bit. And so I thought, don't let this trouble you. And I just shot out a prayer to the Lord, and I said, about so-and-so, how do you feel, Lord? Do you know what came to mind immediately? Goodness. Goodness. I thought, well, I would have never thought that. But that's how you see him, Lord. Forget the preaching bit. He's all goodness. Isn't that fantastic? It completely changed my perspective on that situation when I knew how the Lord was seeing it. Isn't that lovely? He wants us to listen. The other night we were watching something on TV and I said something. We've got one of those new Netflix boxes, you know. Terrible things. Oh, forgive me. Didn't hear me say that. But sometimes the TV is listening to you. And I said something and my line appeared up on the screen. Uh-oh. And Linda said, see, it's listening to us.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Anyway. Jesus is listening to you. All the time he's listening. How do I know that? Well, here's another something that happened that pointed this out. Years ago, I was in the stretch of my life where I was getting up early in the morning and I used to get out of the house and go for a long walk down the beach. I used to walk down Lyle Bay. And I made it a discipline and I'd do it sort of rain, hail or shine. And you know Wellington weather, and there's a bit of hail quite regularly and not so much shine. Anyway, I'm walking down Lyle Bay. It was still dark. Lyle Bay Beach was southerly blowing, and I was freezing to death. And I was grumbling a little bit about the circumstances. Lord, do I really need to do this? And do you really know what it feels like? And, oh, Lord, I thought these thoughts. But the thoughts were said with a sigh, so I knew they weren't my thoughts. If you only knew what it's like to have to live in cold hearts. How about that? If you only knew what it's like to have to live in cold hearts. I thought, Jesus, I didn't know you felt like that. Jesus has feelings too. Jesus has given us an awesome statement. I have told you everything my Father is doing. Do you honestly think that Jesus has already told you everything that the Father is doing in your life? Do you honestly believe that? I think we're on this journey and we need to take it seriously as we learn about him and he learns about us. Now, I want to say this. When we talk about Jesus speaking to us, please don't get weird, okay? People go, God told me this and blah, 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 and I always feel uncomfortable with that. I'm, the Lord speaks to me, but I'm very careful how I express that, and it's important that we do that. Maybe he did speak to you. Maybe it's all my imagination, I don't know. It does take time to recognize his voice because there's a lot of noise out there. And there's a lot of noise in here, and we're immersed in that every day. And we could think of it like static. You know, you're trying to find something on the radio station, and all you're getting is static coming through. And so the signal doesn't get to you. And there's heaps of that out there. You know, I notice I've got some hearing loss. So if I'm sitting in a caf with you, I have to be very careful where I sit because if there's loud background noise or almost any background noise, I can't hear you. The background speaking drowns out the important things that you're saying to me. Static, background noise, all that stuff. Well, what is your background noise? Think about that. What could be your background noise? Is it worry? Is it device? Is it pornography? That's really bad static. Is it busyness? Here's a little thing that came to my mind when I was sitting there. Like our sons, you know my two twin boys, Matthew and Jared. Jared's overseas, but Matt, he's not here, I don't think. But he's probably at home with one of the kids. Anyway, when they were about 18, 19, somewhere about, I think they'd probably been baptized even. But we're having this discussion as a family about hearing the Lord's voice. And both Matt and Jared said, no, we haven't ever heard the Lord's voice. And somebody had commented, if you've got any Masonic stuff in your family line, you always need to go through a session where you pray through and you ask the Lord to break all that stuff off you, because it'll stop you hearing from the Lord. Well, we did it. We got this little book from somebody, didn't we, dear? And we went through and we did a special little event where we prayed through all of the stuff from the Masonic order, broke all the curses. Guess what? Yes, we did. Oh, yeah, my grandfather was heavy into that stuff. Guess what? Both my boys say, from that moment on, they began to hear the voice of the Lord. Isn't that something? So static, blockages, all those things. Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice, and that's a fact. So we are listeners. So the second proof that he's your friend, he wants to take you into his confidence, so he can talk personal things over with you. Now there's a change comes at this point, because Jesus tells us two proofs of how we can prove to him that we want to be his friend. He says, you are my friends if you do what I command. Now, here's the proof of our friendship with him. Quite directly, quite explicitly, Jesus says, if you do what I command, you're my friend. Now, I remember reading that and thinking that actually counts me out. Because how often do I disobey, frankly? Plenty of times. So I can't possibly be a friend of Jesus. Well, actually, it was a relief one day when I read James 3:2. We all stumble in many ways. That means all of us have a problem with this. We all stumble. Does that mean no one can be his friend? Well, if you look closely at the text, you'll realize Jesus is not teaching obedience here. He's teaching friendship. And there's only one command for friendship. Does anyone know what it is? Love. Love one another. Love one another. That's his command for friendship. This is my command, love one another. Greater love has no one than this, etc. You are my friends if you do what I command. That's what Jesus has in mind. Now, Jesus, of course, does want us to obey his commandments, but that's not what he's talking about here. He repeats it again at the end of the passage, actually. Jesus says, the only way to prove your friendship, when you love as I love you, then you prove you're my friend. Now, I want to illustrate this with an off-the-wall illustration, if you like. Imagine you and I went to school together. We became good friends. Then our paths diverged. You settled into a good job here in New Zealand. You saved hard for a house. And I went to the UK on my big OE. I managed to get a job at Buckingham Palace. And after a while, I got to meet the king. And my role put me in touch with him on a daily basis. We'd see a lot of each other. I had to travel with him. He even came to my wedding. And we got to know each other and felt somewhat close. And one day he made a comment to me, hey, John, we're friends. Meanwhile, back in New Zealand, you realize that buying a house is beyond you. So you decide to go on your big OE too. And you come to the UK and you want to do the tour of Buckingham Palace, and that's when you remember John Watson, my old friend. He works at Buckingham Palace. I'll give him a call. So you do. And I say, sure, I'll give you a tour. Meet me at 10 a.m. at the door marked no entry, staff only. So we meet there and I bring you in and I take you around and I take you to places no one gets to. And we're climbing up the steps from the grand hallway up to the next level. And in the middle of this beautiful hallway is one table holding an alabaster vase imported from Egypt. Absolutely stunning. The light is shining through the vase and there's a single rose in the vase and it's understated, but it's stunning. And you say to me, you know, I have never seen such a beautiful vase as that alabaster vase. And I reply, you really like that vase? Take it. It's yours. I'm a good friend of the king. He'd want me to give it to you. Well, what have I proved to you when I offer you the vase? I've proved to you that I'm not just a casual friend of the king. I've proved to you that I'm a very, very, very good friend of Jesus the King. And that means he has given me the right to give away the things that belong to him. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. Jesus is saying, I'll tell you how you can prove you're my friend. I want you to give away the best treasures in my house. That is my love. There's a verse in 1 John that's badly translated. It's in the King James Version. It says, we love him because he first loved us. That verse is not saying that. You can check me up on this. The word him is not there in the original text. It actually it's usually in italics, I might add. If you take out the word him, it changes the whole meaning of the verse. It's saying, we love because he first loved us. And then it says, whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. We love others because he first loved us. So who are the others in our lives? Do we love them? Because here's the truth. If we say we love God, but we have a big problem with our wife, husband, brother, sister, whoever, we're deceiving ourselves. When I say, I love you, Lord, he says, prove it by loving whoever else is in your life. That's the proof of your love to me. In a sense, Jesus doesn't need our love. He loves it. He wants it. He doesn't really need it. But people need our love. People need our love. Well, there's boundaries, of course. You don't let people walk all over you. Love can be tough. Ask any parent, he'll tell you that. Love is not rescuing. It's not enabling people. That's so much not love. It's doing things to make yourself look good. Jesus is calling us to love the way he loves, wisely, sensibly, sacrificially. I'm just going to chop a chunk out of my message at this point because I've got my eye on the clock at the back. So if we really are friends with Jesus Christ, we are able to give away his treasures. Little warning here. When it comes to loving others, you are not Jesus Christ. Get that. In fact, if you think you are, you're a dangerous person. Only God can love the world, folks. What are you? You're a very good friend of Jesus Christ. So you can give away his treasures to whoever is in your life. and whoever he brings into your life. And that's how you prove you're his friend. Now, the final test of your friendship, the final proof of your friendship with Jesus is prayer, the proof of prayer. Jesus says, the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name, whatever. Now, this is the flip side of point two of this story. Remember then, Jesus told us he wants to take us into his confidence. Here Jesus says, I want you to be my friend. I want you to talk to me. Take me into your confidence. Pray. I don't know whether you've ever thought of prayer as a proof of your friendship with Jesus. It is. Jesus says, talk to me about your life. You can talk to me about anything and everything, because that's what friends do. They talk to each other. Friends talk to each other all the time, at every opportunity, whatever, wherever, whenever. Friends like to talk to each other, especially good friends. Jesus says, you can ask favors. You can use the name of my Father. Just thinking about this. Breathing is absolutely essential to life. You stop breathing, you are dead quite quickly. Well, I think prayer is like spiritual breathing. Spiritual breathing. And a praying lifestyle is proof that you want to be his friend. You can pray any place, anytime, any way, anyhow. Any person, you can pray. Are you the friend of Jesus Christ? Do you want to be his friend? Pray. Anyhow, any way, any time, and learn to listen. Listen. So where do we begin? Well, start enjoying his friendship by accepting he has given everything for you. Learn to listen. Ask him to speak to you. Listen to his heart. Give away his love as freely as you receive it, and adopt a lifestyle of prayer. Now you tell me, what can possibly beat friendship with Jesus? I can't think of anything. Well, I'm through, and I'm going to sing a song. And as we sing, just reflect on that. I want you to feel that even the call of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit calling us, yeah, into friendship with Jesus. He wants to be your friend, and we can respond to that. So if the musos would like to come, thank you very much, musos. And we'll sing Faithful You Are. And let's respond in our hearts, all of us. Say, yes, Lord, I agree. I hear your call, Lord Jesus. And I thank you. You want to be my friend. And we'll stand up and sing this. And if you're there today and you feel like you've got maybe some blockage in your inner ears, you're not hearing as you know you could or should, you can come down the front here. We have great people here, would love to pray with you, love to minister to you, love to help you. Yeah, so let's stand and sing, shall we? And I'll hand over to Kirsty. Okay. Thanks, Lizzie.